And welcome to Here We Stand. I am your regular host, Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. Welcome, everyone. It's September 1st, the start of a very momentous month. And part of that momentousness and momentum is the fact that our campaign for Republic in Canada is officially getting started with three town hall meetings. And here's the information some of you are interested in getting. You can also find this at murderbydecree.com under ITCC's updates in the coming week. But our Republic meetings begin in Ontario. That's the eastern section. In the west, they're going to have their own meetings. We'll be posting those as well. But for now, the definite information coming out of Ontario is Owen Sound, Monday, September 16th. Our Republic Town Hall meeting will be at 3 p.m. that day at the 2nd Avenue Gallery. That's 984 2nd Avenue East in Owen Sound. That's Monday, September 16th at 3 p.m. Then on Friday in Picton, Ontario, Brenda Everill, our candidate, is speaking there along with myself and Tim Barch. And that will be at Lily's Cafe at 1 p.m. It's a bookstore, 289 Main Street in Picton, Ontario. And the next day, the big event, the town hall meeting in Toronto, where all three of us are speaking, and that will be at 1 p.m. at That Channel TV Studio. That's 600 Bay Street, number 510, Suite 510, 600 Bay Street, 1 p.m. Saturday, September 21st. Now, at all these events, I will be present speaking about the campaign for the Republic, how it ties into all of our work over the last many years. And it's very interesting because if you look at the last few months, it's been a gradual progression of amazing events. Starting last April and May, when at the United Nations, a movement was created to expel the Vatican. A document circulated among a lot of delegations showing the reasons why the Vatican needs to be expelled from the United Nations General Assembly as a convicted criminal body. And interestingly, on June 2nd, that came out 2 days later, Pierre Trudeau admits to genocide. And that really is what kicked off the Republic of Canada election campaign and the creation of a tribunal into the crimes of genocide in Canada, to which Trudeau and 20 other officials were summoned for September 16th. Now, that tribunal is going on the road. It's going into many communities. It will also confront Trudeau at his old candidates' meetings and the other people who are subpoenaed. So this is in gear this month and going into October when the election will probably occur. So knowing that, what we want to do today was play a show from June 2nd in which we go into some of the background. We don't want to lose the history of what's led up to all of this stuff. It's very easy to these days to lose perspective. We're going to step back, play a show in which we talked about this movement at the UN, also the source of the crime of church and state historically, coming out of Rome, the Vatican, and how, it's interesting, Trudeau, like every other prime minister in Canada, is Roman Catholic. Going back to the time of his dad, Pierre Trudeau, that's over 50 years, they've all been Catholics except one, Stephen Harper. And it's interesting that Harper's the one who announced the apology. I guess the other controlled little Church of Rome flunkies weren't allowed to do it or something. That's my speculation on my part, but it's no doubt the case. Now, we're going to play the show today, gives you more of a background. We'll be back again live next week with more updates of the election campaign. But here's something, hard truth announcement. We need funds to do this campaign, folks, and very few of you have been forthcoming. We put out a call weeks ago, actually over a month ago. We're trying to raise $10,000 for the campaign. So far, we've had a grand contribution of $150. So it shows you that people's good intentions and their actions are really out of pace. If you want something to happen, folks, you have to make it happen. Even if you're not willing to do it personally, you have to arm those of us who are out on the front line to do it. That's if you care about anything beyond just talking. That's you have to follow through with action. So to donate financially, go to murderbydecree.com. At the top, you'll see a donate button. And you can also write to us, donate through PayPal, through the email pickwick88@yahoo.com, or write to Republic of Canada, K-A-N-A-T-A, Republic of Canada at gmail.com. Put your money and your bodies where your mouth is. Now, final announcement. I thought you'd find this amusing. Ever since the attempt to arrest United Church officials a number of years ago, the United Church especially has been especially paranoid. And just the other day, people tried to go into the United Church General Council office in Toronto and found, lo and behold, you can't get in there anymore without a special key. And we talked to one of the people in the office, called them up, and they said, oh, yeah, all the Unite Church offices and churches are like that now. You can't just get in. Nobody can just walk in anymore. You need a special pass key. Well, I think that's interesting. That came out very soon after we reminded Unite Church delegates to their general council meeting, and at a special Unite Church meeting in Vancouver last May, we had told them they're trespassing legally on native land. They were legally evicted. They can now be arrested, and they're property seized, just like the Anglicans and the Catholics. So I put that out there, folks, to remind you that, yes, we are having an effect, even if you never see it. So maybe that'll be an incentive for you folks to fork over some more funds so we can make this happen. And follow our work, murderbydecree.com, under ITCCS updates. There'll be more coming. The show today is very informative. Listen in. Stay strong. Stay clear. Get active with us in this campaign. And we will see you all next week. Thank you. And welcome to Here We Stand, the voice of the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, the ITCCS, the Common Law Liberation Movement. I am your regular host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. Welcome. It's June the 2nd, the start of a great month. We're here today to help turn this upside-down world right side up through right action, backed by knowledge and courage. We're part of a growing common law movement to bring down the mighty from their thrones and return power to the people. And the most notorious and murderous such throne is the criminal combination of church and state that's killed more people in history than any other power, but whose day of reckoning is fast approaching. Well, we witnessed some of that reckoning this past week when a new initiative was launched to expel the Vatican from the United Nations and strip the Catholic Church of its diplomatic status and privileges. Long time coming. As a convicted transnational criminal organization, the Church of Rome has no right to enjoy tax exemptions and the status of a so-called nation. This was made clear last Friday when the ITCCS and its allies at the United Nations released a special report to the UN member states and the world media. And that report outlined how and why the Vatican must not only be ejected from the UN as a criminal body, but sanctioned, prosecuted, and disestablished. That's required under the UN Charter and international law. We're going to talk about that today, and the fact that the UN leadership, the Security Council, has been given 1 month to respond. If not, global direct actions to make this happen will commence on July 1st. And direct actions is a lot of what we talk about here and what we practically organize on the ground. This show is not just to inform and educate, but to give people the tools to train their people in their communities, take direct action to take back the earth for themselves and their children and the future generations. Now, in related news to that, on the very same day this UN action occurred, last Friday, May 31st, one of our Vancouver action groups connected to the ITCCS and the Republic of Canada, a group of 3 to 4 people, got together and they confronted one of the Vatican's main co-conspirators in genocide and the continued trafficking and murder of children. That is the United Church of Canada. Now, they went down to the main conference of the United Church, being held in Langley that day, and they handed out something called a public notice of criminal liability in order to comply. And what it did is it formally evicted the United Church from the territory of the Squamish Indigenous Nation. Now, this was acting on a duly filed writ and statement in the BC Supreme Court by Chief Chiapalano, who is the traditional CM or elder of the Squamish people. Now, this area takes in traditionally all of the lower mainland of Vancouver, several million people, where there's 83 churches of the Catholic Anglican United Church. Now, it said to the members and the clergy, you're part of a criminal organization complicit in the death of over 60,000 residential school children and ongoing child trafficking on the west coast of Canada. Let it be further known that you're engaged in illegal trespass on the sovereign territory of the Squamish Nation. Accordingly, under the law, you are liable for immediate arrest and the seizure of your assets and property. According to this eviction order and the lawful verdict of the Common Law Court of Justice in 2013, therefore, you are ordered to immediately vacate your church properties in the Lower Mainland and to cease and desist from associating with the United Church, funding or operating under its direction. Otherwise, you may face arrest, imprisonment, and the public seizure of your church properties. Now, what was very interesting about this was we heard from a source in Toronto who is connected to the United Church head office that very same day, the moderator of the United Church called an emergency general council executive meeting for bright and early Monday morning to talk about exactly this.
Because the reason these people are reacting in this way is the same reason that we were able to force Pope Benedict Joseph Ratzinger out of office in February 2013, and that is they know that they are illegally occupying this land. There was never a deed signed. They seized it and committed genocide in that way. So they know that legally they can, Native people and others can walk in, toss them out tomorrow, seize those church properties. This is a great weapon, and they are showing once again by their reaction the power we have. It's now just a question of acting on it. Today on our show, we'll be discussing these historical developments, especially this thing that was issued at the UN, a position paper outlining the criminal nature of the Vatican and why the UN needs to expel it. We're going to be talking about that, but use that as a springboard to talk about direct action on other issues in their communities. Let me bring my guests on now. I should also mention, all of this is covered recently at our website, murderbydecree.com. What you have to do is go to that site, murderbydecree.com, go to the headline saying ITCCS updates, and you'll see two recent postings about that, May 31st and June 1st postings and YouTube broadcasts on these themes. So go to the ITCCS updates at murderbydecree.com. Now, let me bring on my guests, Christy and Brenda. Hello to both of you.
Hey, Kev. Hey, Christy.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Brenda. Pleasure to have you guys, and this is going to be amazing. Thank you.
Yes, and I want to just say to both of you, you are frontline activists on the ground. We've had Brenda on before from Southern Ontario in Canada. Christy is from in America. I'll let her describe that. But let me, Brenda, if you don't mind, since Christy hasn't been on before, let's have her respond first, and you can jump in at any point. I do want to have a few things for you specifically to talk about, Brenda, in the way of updates and that. But let me ask both of you, but starting with Christy, the whole thing of whether you've looked at this document that was released at the UN and your thoughts about how it might, you know, this precedent might relate to the work you're doing.
Absolutely. Kevin, what the main thing that I took away from the very well drafted the well drafted document here is what stuck out the most is the 1933 I have it written right here, the Concordat 1933, where the financial concordats that they secretly channel taxpayers' money from over 100 nations into the Vatican Bank. Well, what else happened here in America in 1933 was the United States filed bankruptcy. And in that bankruptcy, what happened is we now are the human individuals, the sovereign citizens, the sovereigns of this United States now are in debt to the Federal Reserve and then all financial institutions, so to speak. So what this does is it connects a lot of the dots in terms of our freedom fighters movement, everything that we're doing to protect the inalienable rights of us as humans and sovereigns. Now, this shows that the direct line of finances, crimes, human trafficking, is all going through these channels financially and all the way back up to the Vatican through the Federal Reserve System, through the banking system. And it starts with us right now not even realizing that we are indentured servants to the Vatican. This really just tied, brought all of the dots together in my eyes as to the nefarious agendas of the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican, and then how it ties in with the bankers.
And I think, you know, that explains, people often say in any campaign, you follow the money first. And certainly in this case, roads, these financial roads all lead to Rome. There's a very shadowy thing, a bank in Switzerland called the Bank of International Settlements. And it and the Vatican Bank are the two financial districts that are, they have a so-called territorial immunity. They stand outside all laws, at least according to themselves they do. And so it's the way that a lot of major banks, the mafia, other criminal bodies, can launder their money every year to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. So I think that explains why they have such pull at the United Nations. Even though they don't constitute a nation, they violate the UN Charter left, right, and center. They block UN conventions they don't like. No other group at the UN is allowed to do that except the Vatican. So I think this relates to a lot of the roadblocks and crimes that we face all the time. Brenda, your thoughts are on any of this?
Well, I haven't actually had a chance to check out that document, Kevin. I've been right out of the loop for 2 weeks or so, yep. But Christy summed it up really well. It sounds exciting. And it's definitely what needs to happen. You know, the more we push, they'll push back, and, well, there's got to be a winner at some point, so.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I know in your own work, the way you have been targeted, in our work, you know, the first thing we need to do is to recognize this behemoth we're up against and realize that the security of our frontline fighters is the most important thing. And I know that today that's going to lead into a discussion of some of the concrete things that we can do, including creating local common law peace officers, you know, with deputies that can actually defend and protect people on the ground when we start taking these direct actions. So I know you've got a lot of insights into that and experience doing that, Brenda. So, you know, please jump in on that. I want to also ask both of you, when we're looking at this effort that's happening at the UN, I found that it's amazing on the ground, the people in any institution who know it's rotten, they know it's criminal, and yet they're not able to come out at this point because they're worried about their jobs or whatever. But they still are sympathetic, and they provide us with a lot of information. And that's one of the reasons that we know that anyone in a system knows it's a system of, like, almost institutionalized accountability. These leaders set themselves above the law. And one amazing thing that goes on at the UN is they can actually, even though they're an organization that is openly committing mass murder, and, you know, one example, this paper that was released to the UN member states and the media on Friday documents is the way the Vatican organized a direct genocide in Croatia during World War II that killed off almost 1 million Serbs, because the Serbs were not Catholics. They were Orthodox. So Pope Pius XII, funny name, right, Pius? Pope Pius XII orders the creation of this thing called the Jasenovac death camp, where over 1 million people were slaughtered by Franciscan priests. These guys were carrying weapons around. They were slaughtering Serbs en masse. And the Franciscan bishop of Sarajevo, Ivan Saric, organized all this thing. After the war, these guys are used to bring Nazis into North America. So naturally, the U.S. kind of buries this whole atrocity. But when the survivors of that tried to sue the Vatican, the U.S. Attorney General backed up the Vatican and said, well, there was no Human Rights Convention back then, therefore none of it was illegal. And, I mean, it shows you this institutionalized criminality we're dealing with. So I think it's another example of that.
Well, we're going to have more validation coming up to support us, because I just heard on the radio today that tomorrow there's an important gathering in Quebec, and it's a native-based, I believe. And they said that important truths are going to be revealed about the outright genocide in Canada.
Uh-huh.
So,
wow.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
It's going to start, you know, definitely support what we're saying, which we know was definitely a church-led event. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting event tomorrow. We'll see what they have to say.
Good. And I know that, you know, when we're talking about genocide and how it's really, you know, the basis of it is you see everywhere now. And the most recent example of that, of course, is the whole forced vaccination thing, where in Rockland County last month, in Brooklyn this month, and all over the world now, governments are declaring that if kids are not vaccinated, their parents will go to jail. And I know, Chrissy, you've got a campaign going kind of focused on that. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's stopnop.org. And what it is we are now global. I'm not the, I'm not the head of this. Denise Young, this woman is blood, sweat and tears, died for what she, for the cause that she's standing for, but I'm helping her. But this is, it's, the largest vaccine protest. So we're going to be standing in, the parades on July 1st and July 4th and the respective independence days in those specific countries. So that we're going to be bringing to light the vaccine injured, and standing against any government organization. It doesn't matter. We're not country specific. Any government or, either work organization that's requiring mandatory vaccines will be exposed. We're going to bring the testimonies out from these parents of vaccine injured children, the studies, the people who have been suppressed. So it's going to be a large gathering, city specific, but you can find out more at stopnop.org. about where you can go and basically tell your story or stand up against what your personal rights are. And this is so fundamental because they're taking away slowly and surely your human rights, but we need to make sure that we are standing up against and standing for our inalienable human rights, that, and that would be to force or any injury upon anybody. And if vaccines are unavoidably unsafe, which is what their legislation speaks of in the Supreme Court, that how can you force an unsafe anything upon somebody else? That right there is an usurpation of your human rights. So that's
list your website again.
Yes, it's stopnop.com.
NOP. Okay.
Yes.
It's a big issue too in Canada, of course. And Brenda, you know, what strikes me about all this is vaccines and this whole thing of so-called public health is always the Trojan horse through which they bring in police state legislation. Looking back in the history of how these death camps called residential schools were set up, it was originally presented as a way to protect the health and livelihood of the Indians, believe it or not. You know, just like the death camps in Europe were described under the Nazi legislation as protective custody. They had to protect mm-hmm. these people for their own good by putting them in concentration camps. So what's your I know you've had experience doing this, but is people working with people on the ground, do you see any headway happening in Canada about this issue or other related issues?
I do. I think we're seeing some headway. It seems that a lot of advocates are taking the next awakening step, like they've awoken finally to the beast that we're all fighting, and we're all coming, finding common ground finally on who, you know, the ultimate enemy is. So, which is, of course, the Vatican and their nasty UN Agenda 2030, where vaccines are definitely mandated for us all, global citizens. You know, it's written right in there that vaccines are coming as a mandate yep. globally. So, I do see a lot of people standing up to that now, and there is a lot of resistance, but I really think we're gaining because we have the truth on our side. And, you can only resist that for so long. And there's a lot of, awakenings coming in the child protection sector. There was a child protection worker recently charged here, and her history is actually opening a lot of eyes to what's really going on behind the scenes with some of these child protection workers. And who
well, we know, you know, them. And similar in the U.S., the Children's Aid Society in Ontario is a private company posing as a government agency, and it gets thousands of bucks for every child they grab and traffic into foster homes. And it's amazing the shit that comes down on people when it's very similar to the comparable agency in Ireland called TUSLA, where you cannot sue TUSLA. It's like Big Pharma. You're not allowed to actually hold them legally accountable for anything that happens with the vaccines. Same thing with the child trafficking agencies. You cannot mention them in the news, like in a newspaper report. You might get sued. There's all of this protection around these criminal corporations doing this stuff.
Yeah, and on top of this recent worker being charged, we're still dealing with the local director of the former Prince Edward County Children's CAS facing his charges for not only knowing that children were being raped in care, but actively covering it up.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot going on in Ontario with exposing how this system is really working. So hopefully that's going to spill out into the rest of the world. I'll do my part in making sure it does. Because
you're doing more than your part, sir, I know.
All these child protection systems are the same. And once a child goes in, they have to be vaccinated. And they are funded to the point of, you know, over $1 billion. And there was all kinds of tax cuts here in Ontario with our new budget. But, you know, of course, not to CAS. So we see what's being funded and what's not. And it's really clear now that CAS is being given the red or the green light to just do as they please.
Right. Christy, you can jump in. Any comments or thoughts about any
sure,
of this?
So- Yep. I guess my question would, or I have kind of a follow up. So if, you know, I'm reading over, bringing up the crimen solicitationis, and that, you know, this is kind of what it ties in with how everything is basically organized crime. And good. That kind of, you know, from the top down, you know, we can try to take on this behemoth, like you've mentioned before, Kevin, but from a grassroots, I think it's imperative that we all understand that we're all fighting the same behemoth and that our power is in numbers. We need to start forming these local organizations, grassroots, and stick together, because if we start standing together and the power of a peaceful protest, it speaks volume. I mean, it's more reason I'm bringing this up is that it gives people hope, and we want to be able to provide people that hope, that protection, and that remedy of, look, they have been operating in the shadows, but now we're bringing this to light, and we have solutions and options and remedies that are effective. You know, from Kevin, what you've done with Pope Benedict, and from what we're going to be replicating from what you've done with our local sheriff's charters, this is the hope that people need. And then this is where we're going to have our ability to have our own law enforcement, our own protection that actually stands for human rights and, you know, all under a human rights alliance. I mean, that's really what we need to just unite under. Because nobody's against human rights. Your intentions are showing if you speak anything against anybody fighting for human rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do want to go in that direction soon on the show about, what do we do specifically? You know, we have our common law training manual. I know that there's, you know, people have written other things based on that. But it's really a question of giving a model, you know, leading by example. And right. I'd really like it if both of you could kind of kick in if you had any anecdotes or examples of how you've done that. You know, especially when it comes to the anecdote I always love to use is one of the times we occupied the Catholic Cathedral in Vancouver just a month before the apology was announced for the residential school genocide. We go into this Catholic cathedral on a Sunday morning, unannounced, and when the police show up, I read to them, I give them a copy of Crimen Solicitanus, and I say, this is a criminal policy whereby they will never report to you guys when children are raped. Are you seriously going to protect this church? And the police sergeant looks at it, he talks to on his walkie-talkie, and they leave, right? And wow. There we're alone in there, occupying the Catholic church, the priests are freaking out, but their police protection is gone because we just stood on the moral high ground and said, you are not going to defend this criminal body. We're not going to let you. And they backed off.
The truth has been suppressed for so long, and those of us who are trying to bring it out are going to be oppressed. But, you know, it's almost there. So if we get the truth into the people's hands, they are going to do the right thing.
Exactly. They always do. But, you know, they're looking for another way. And part of the problem is, I remember Carol Martin, one of the Native women who worked with us in that occupation, said, when she was speaking to everybody, our biggest enemy is our own thinking, because we've been conditioned to think as slaves. And the first thing we do is look to the system for a solution. And it's a whole new kind of mental discipline we need to start saying, no, look to ourselves. What are we going to create, right?
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Exactly. True intelligence is not a human's ability to remember, but their ability to forget. And forget the indoctrination and right. Relearn it. It's our time.
I love the quote from Samuel Adams in the American Revolution when he said, it never takes a majority to prevail, just a determined minority willing to light brush fires of freedom in the mm-hmm. minds of men and women, right? And we set enough of those brush fires all over the world, and we see it happening, right? They can't put them all out.
No way.
Exactly.
Tell me, Chrissy, a little bit about what you guys have been doing specifically on that whole thing of the sheriff's charter. What is that? What's kind of your vision about how to start this grassroots, really a revolution going?
Yes, definitely. So what we've decided to do is structure the, there's going to be a people's assembly, and within that people's assembly, we're uniting under what we're coining our organization, our alliances, the Human Rights Alliance. And we're going to, our main focus is to protect the rights of first and foremost is going to be children. So what we've seen is the human trafficking, the child protective services coming in and just, I mean, it's just atrocious, the blatant mm-hmm. crimes that they're doing. And especially, and it ties even into the courts. And there's a lot of underlying, you know, nefarious activities that are going on, but we don't have the authority to come in and stop this. So uniting under our Human Rights Alliance with our sheriff's charters, I'm finalizing I'm actually emulating what Kevin's done up in Kanata. But what we're going to be doing is, you know, having our basic charter and then our our core principles, our four staples, and you know, all being under uniting and preserving and protecting the human rights, especially those that cannot be that are unable to protect themselves, such as children. And our we just found our sheriff. It's funny. It's amazing how the universe puts the right people in front of you. From day one, when he, you know, recently wanted to, from the day he wanted to be a sheriff up until now, he had just recently got a gift from his friend that was a vest and a sheriff star on it out of nowhere. And it, you know, this was like 2 weeks prior to our phone call. And as I'm talking to him, he's like, "Yeah, you wouldn't believe what my best friend just had given me 2 weeks prior." And so, I mean, you know, the universe is speaking to what we're doing here. And the best thing that I want to understand is that we want to make sure that we're properly trained and sworn in. So that was actually a question that I was going to bring up to you, Kevin. The authority of what we're trying, how are we able to grant our sheriffs the authority to be able to go, you know, and act upon these writs or these arrest warrants or, you know, our affidavits that they're violating their oath, the politicians or anybody's violating their oath of office. How do they have that authority to, you know, what will give us that standing?
Well, you've got a real advantage in America, because the first point on that is that it's written into the state, many state constitutions, that the people are the government, that the principle of self-governance is enshrined. And therefore, you can create something like they've done in Pennsylvania to stop the fracking wells, where this one community in Grant Township, 700 people, said, okay, we are establishing a home rule charter. That means we, the local people in our assembly, are the law. And we are bringing in a law that negates the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and says, no, they cannot build a fracking well here, because it's going to destroy our watershed. And they're going right up against the system by doing that. And they're under major attack, but they're getting allies sprouting up all over the country, inspired by this example. So first of all, you can't just as an individual say, okay, I'm a sheriff now, or I'm going to appoint you. We got to kind of break from this individualized thinking and say, no, you need to be a constituted assembly of 12 or more men and women. And that, you know, sometimes it's in the form of a common law charter, like they signed in Dublin when they formed the same group last year. You form a common law assembly based on that. And that assembly, with its own constitution, is a mini government. It's recognized under both domestic and international law as a bona fide body, a legislative body that can make its own laws, appoint its own police force, the whole bit. And at that point, we created a counterpole of attraction in society, right? People can come to us now with as we're an alternative. So that assembly appoints the sheriff and trains the sheriff, and it derives its authority. When the cops show up, you say, well, I'm operating under the authority of this constituted body. As a matter of fact, we're asking you, the police, to take an oath of allegiance as a local resident to uphold and defend that body and its laws, because we are standing not on the administrative law that runs the system now, but actual rule of law, jury-based common law, which is guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution, that we have that right. And so then it's really just a question of acting on it, because, you know, I like to say, 1 hour in battle is worth 2 months of training. You know, you learn on the ground many of these lessons, and that's why people have to start doing these things, right?
Understood. Right. That's brilliant. Thank you.
And I've been brainstorming too, if we could somehow start, you know, an international coalition of people's assemblies, so that we're kind of all on the same page from the word go.
That's brilliant, Brenda. It's kind of like our answer to the UN, right?
Yeah.
There you go. I mean, the International Human Rights Alliance.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, I think that's really important for us to have some kind of uniform movement happening where, you know, we can all act freely in our own areas, but we've got some kind of agreed upon mandate and someone to balance things off of when we do get in trouble. And that's where our protections will form. And
that's brilliant.
Yes.
So hopefully we can all work for, or, you know, work on that together and get something sprouting.
Now, Christy, do you want to say where your assembly is forming, or do you want to say at this point?
So we can do it. We have Southern California, we're not certain if, whether it's going to be in San Diego County, Orange County, or LA County. We have the assets, major assets in all three, but in terms of sheriffs and jurisdiction, whatnot, we're not really 100% determined on that. But Southern California is going to be where we're starting, but it doesn't, we're not tied locally to Southern California. We want to obviously make this the bigger, the better.
Right. And that it's interesting. You know, the number of calls we get and emails from people in California is greater almost. The only other area in the States where we get similar is in the Midwest and East Coast, of people who are wanting to, you know, take this, start doing more than talking and actually establish these alternatives. And you guys have an advantage in the States, of course, because you have a whole system of locally elected sheriffs. And that's an old English common law tradition going back to the shires of medieval England, and where the people can police their own community, right? And so you, the sheriff's elect is accountable to the local electorate. You guys already know how to do that. Whereas in Canada, I mean, Brenda, geez, you're up against these crown agencies. They're paramilitary police forces like the Ontario Provincial Police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They're self-governing. Like if you're an RCMP officer and you get canned or you go up against the system, you can't even use, it's like when I went, when I got defrocked from the United Church. Church courts like military and RCMP courts are secret. They're outside the rule of the land, the law of the land. And so these are paramilitary organizations. There's no democratic police force like you have potentially in America, right?
No way. They're very tyrannical here. You don't stand a chance with the police services the way they are. You know, years ago, they made sure they took out wherever possible across Canada the town police services, and they implemented the OPP and RCMP wherever they could. And it's just a really oppressive system.
Well, that in a way, you know, when we established the Republic of Canada, the jurisdiction of it back in January 2015, we said in that founding statement that we had a bigger uphill battle than in America because the people in Canada don't have any tradition of self-governance. You know, our 1776 occurred in 1837. I got crushed in a few days, the attempted rebellion against the British Crown. And since then, the power of the church and state was like created this monopoly in Canada where the people think, I don't even have the right. You know, this anecdote I love, the contrast a bit. I talk about it in my latest book, The Border. Where I've seen the same incident occur in once was in Vancouver, another in New York City, where somebody crosses the road, jaywalks, and they get a ticket. They get stopped by a cop. In Vancouver, people avert their eyes and they walk around the person like they're up against, they broke the law. They're a bad person. Whereas in New York, this crowd forms around and starts telling the cop to lay off this guy. You know, what are you doing? So that attitude shows that in one country, Canada, people believe that the law is sacrosanct. You cannot defy it. You've got to obey it like a serf, right? Out of the Middle Ages. America, people are saying, well, I don't know if I'll obey that law. I may not agree with it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a different mentality. I'm not generalizing. I don't say it's everybody is like that. But these are real tendencies in different cultures. And in Canada, we have a bigger battle because people in our work, always say, well, are we allowed to do this, right?
No. We can't stop apologizing long enough to, you know, take action. We're so apologetic and so conform to offending. You know, we don't want to offend. We don't want to upset the apple cart. Like, Canadians are very timid people, no matter what history says. You know, when we do go into battle, we're fierce. But besides that, we're very complacent people.
That's, well, you're wow, not. That is a, I'm going to say that we must have found the two that aren't. Good idea.
Right.
Well, thank you for your efforts. I mean, this is, in the United States, I mean, from even just the difference between Northern California and Southern California versus West Coast, East Coast, it depends on, you know, and I compare it to Texas as well. So Texas is a very, we call that a very Republican or red state where, you know, everyone's got a gun and it's everybody's right to bear arms and they're very constitutionalist to say, you know, the least. Out in California, I mean, we're signing away our firstborn child's health to Big Pharma because we think a doctor said so is the best answer to our research. So we fight different battles. I think, it, you know, relatively speaking, I mean, there's some parents that just believe a doctor because he's got a white lab coat, where if you actually ask the parent if they've read the studies or read the inserts, and they say, well, no, and you show them and then their jaw drops on the floor. You're like, oh my gosh. Okay. We can open up a book now and read for ourselves. Right.
Yeah. And thank you for the pushback in California, because that's felt here in Canada. You guys are pushing back really strong on the vaccines, but they came pretty heavy after your kids. So you had to push back.
It's, you know, when you see, thank you for that. And when you see the agendas written on their clothing, in terms of politicians and who they're aligned with, and we're exposing, you know, the connections between politicians and big pharma and lobbyists, mm-hmm. it's disgusting. And, you know, the more the people know, the more they stand against what we're being forced on. So it's, you know, the great revelation, the apocalypse, however we want to call it, the great awakening, it's here. And finally people are realizing that this is the time. It's the time to stop.
It is.
Being docile.
I saw Del Bigtree give a simple little presentation there a couple weeks ago, and he just spoke the truth so quietly and clearly that it cannot be questioned or you know, turned away. Like, it was spoken so well that the science is right there, and the government has choices to make at this point, because we're not fighting with them anymore. It's, you know, this is the science, and it's your turn to, you know, take a look at it and tell us where you went wrong, because these vaccines are not safe.
they wrote it in there. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Kevin.
No, you go ahead. I've just got an email I wanted to mention, but go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, in their legislation, they have vaccines are unavoidably unsafe, which gives mm-hmm. all the pharmaceutical companies complete indemnity. So, I mean, would you go buy a car seat knowing that the car seat manufacturer could not be held liable if they put out a defunct car seat? No.
Exactly.
It's very simple. So why would you do that with something that's extremely toxic, has an insert that's written in size 4 font that's two-sided, that's 5 pages long if you actually wrote it out, and this is what you want to just blindly accept as okay to inject into your children? You're right. Mm-hmm. When the information is put very eloquently with matter-of-fact information, you can't, people will need to make a choice, and it's the, you know, it's their choice of whether you want to choose self-knowledge and, you know, your freedom and your sovereignty, or to mm-hmm. be eternally enslaved and be, and follow the masses. Sometimes the M is silent, right?
Yeah. And this next round of vaccines that is globally mandated, you know, it's going to affect the brains of the way we think. Like, it's going to be the final step of slavery. And if we accept that, it's our own demise.
Well, you know, the good thing about the planting the seeds of a new type of organization like and a system like the Common Law Assemblies is it's also the seed of a new society, in that we've got to get people out of the cities, back on the land. There's kind of a movement that started in England, actually. It's spreading different spots, and it's using the Common Law to say we need to build self-sustaining communities in the country, out of the cities, because, as you mentioned, Brenda, part of the 2030 agenda is the urbanization of the entire world's population by 2030. Mm-hmm. And you're basically in these urban prison camps where you're totally controlled. Well, we need a counter movement out of the cities for that. And we've already, there's at least 2 projects where we're involved in doing that, but they're off the radar. We're not letting anybody know about it. We need to get the kids out of the cities into the land, mm-hmm. because the best healing is to get back into the natural energy patterns of Mother Nature, and then we get clear and we get resolved in ways we can
as
when
we go
back in the city.
As we do meetings and whatnot, you know, forming our common law people's assemblies and whatnot, the more we can do these meetings outside, get people grounded, we just really need to be doing that as we work on getting them out of the city permanently.
Well, as individuals too, like every day we need to go down, just lie in the grass and look up at the sky, and then we know what we need to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Hey, Christine, let me ask you, besides the west coast of California, have you got indication, like I heard there was a similar people's assembly forming in Seattle. Are you getting an indication these things are happening just through your network, you know, in other areas?
It's going international so far. So as far as I know, there's movements in Australia. I'm not sure if anybody follows Max Egan, but I've been following him for probably 3 years now. He's a very powerful truth speaker out in Australia. He's been censored. If he's been, if they've been arrested or censored unnecessarily, that they have something to say. So he's been censored 3 times, to completely shut down his YouTube page. But he's talking about grassroots movements going on in Australia in mass right now as well. So we're all kind of operating separately, but simultaneously and in sync without really knowing it. So once I think that, Brenda, you brought up that very good point, if we can umbrella everything, where it's, the International Common Law People's Assemblies or the International Human Rights Assemblies, whatever we want to blanket that under, that's where we can unify all of these global movements. Even down in Mexico, I know that there's some issues with citizenship that we're looking into on how people can denounce their citizenship to, United States corporation or the corrupt, entities that are operating in the shadows as actual countries, which they're not. But all of these movements are operating, everyone's got their different piece of the puzzle. So we're if we can unify under this, we can put those pieces together and create this massive, etched together, loomed blanket. If we want to, get a visual there. But this is what we're connecting the dots right now. With individuals and organizations.
I know that the strength of our whole movement is local self-governance, and sitting with even 2 or 3 people and seeing the sparks fly, that's a source of such great power. And that tends to get lost in a big crowd. And that's why I think we need to put a limit on the size of these assemblies, right? If it gets too big, we're just replicating the problem. I remember when I was a kid, when I lived in Manitoba, my folks took me down to one weekend to this Hutterite colony south of Winnipeg, and they've lived on a completely communal basis for like 400 years. They don't use violence. They don't pay taxes, and they hold everything in common. And what remember Jake Kleinsasser, the guy who was the head of the colony, said, well, he was rotating head. He said, the way he put it, Christ gets lost in a crowd. For them. And he said up to about 150 people, then they split off and form a new colony, because as soon as you get above, and sociology has shown this, if you get more than about 100 to 150 people, we can't remember everybody's name, and you get a hierarchy set up where somebody has to mediate the truth to somebody else. And then that's when people start losing their power again. So I think we have to be really creative in how we keep these... create a million of these little things all over the place rather than thinking we got to build a huge, because that's our tendency. We always tend to think big because of the way we've been taught about this stuff, right?
And that's where I've been thinking, lately. I've just been like, we got to scale back this grandeur thinking and just act in our own areas the best way we can.
Right. Yep. And you're both saying
that. I don't even get ahead of it. I get, when I'm working out these things and on paper, how can we do this? Sometimes I even get this big hierarchy thing going on, then I got to scale it back and say, what's realistic for like a people's assembly? And you just got to keep scaling back and shedding that old mindset of, you got to have this big government.
Well, because people don't think they have the power to do anything. And that's reinforced the bigger you get. You think, oh, well, we got a leader now. He'll do the thinking for me. And we're all raised to think that way. So,
because once the base structure is laid out, the people are going to govern themselves. It's in our nature to govern ourselves. So once we have a basic template laid out, it's just more or less a piece of cake.
That's right.
Christy, I've got a question from a listener. There's several asked, actually. And different people are writing in with questions. They're loving the show, by the way. They want you both back on. And I want you both back on. Ask her if, this is for you, Chrissy, if you're aware of U.S.-appointed judges who are upholding the Constitution. That's the question.
Is there a list? Is there something? I have not seen a list of U.S. judges that are upholding the Constitution. As far as I'm concerned, I have a list of ones that are not upholding the Constitution. If there are ones, I would love to have that list. That is, the more we can have on our side, the better. If she has a link or whatnot, that would be tremendously helpful.
Yeah, she said, in other words, there's a purging of unconstitutional judges. I know one example of that. There was a judge, and I worked with a group of farmers in South Dakota about 5 years ago. They had formed a thing based out of Minneapolis, and it was called Restore the Republic. And this was, they're having gatherings of hundreds of farmers because they found out that local judges were working with these mortgage companies to fraudulently evict farmers from their homes and land to grab it. And they proved it. They got the U.S. Marshals in Minneapolis to actually serve one of these judges. And the guy eventually went to jail because the reason is the farmers went into that courtroom and confronted the guy. It's kind of like that. There was a video up on YouTube until the British government took it off, forced it off, where it showed these people going into a court in Liverpool, hundreds of people, and they physically removed the judge because he was bringing in, it had been proved, he was bringing in fraudulent local tax, and he had no authority to do so. So they threw him out of court, right? And nothing ever happened to them for it because if you have enough people, enough, you know, courage, you can do these things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, wow. Definitely.
Well, there was a judge caught, you know, I think he was in the States. It was the cash, Kids for Cash scam.
Yeah.
He was literally working with the CAS to, or the Child Protection Services, to have these kids brought into care for the funding and all the perks and whatnot. So they, you know, some of them definitely are in it. And if they're not in it, they're just sitting by watching it. And it is a dangerous time for them to take a stand. So that's where the stronger we get, these people can come over and tell their story and have some protection and make our allegiance bigger.
And I think it would be great for you, Christine, others who are involved in this common law movement in California, to be able to come up eventually to Canada and say, you know, as part of our, under the jurisdiction of our republic, and say, look, here's how we're doing it. Because in Canada, you see, judges are like autocrats. I had a recent example of that in a Vancouver Supreme Court, where you go in now, and I don't know if this is true in Ontario, Brenda, but there are no more Canadian flags in courts. There's just the symbol of the City of London, the crown, so-called Crown of England, up on the wall.
Wow.
And they won't, this native guy, it was a fishing dispute case, and I went over to one of the native guys and said, ask the judge what her name is and to recite her oath of office. And he tried to do it, and she said, sit down. She wouldn't answer, and he persisted, and the sheriffs came over and removed him. So these are Canadian courts.
Wow.
That's how they operate, right? And we need an example of what rule of law is really about, because in Canada, people think rule of law is one guy telling you what to do, and you got to go along with it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah, like there's got to be a safety network for the ones who do want to speak out and do the right thing, because they're just going to keep being as corrupt as they are as long as we let them be. But there are some good ones in there that want to come over. They just know their life is going to be a train wreck if they do. So, you know, I offer CAS workers around here. I've said, if you want some kind of immunity, like, I can help you get that. But you got to take the first step to come out of that corrupt organization and tell your story. But I haven't got anyone to take that offer yet.
Oh, this is hard work we got to do on the ground, and we're doing it. We've got 5 minutes left, and I want to give you both a chance to sum up and talk about next week what we want to talk about, maybe some directions we want to go on this. Brenda, why don't you kick off?
Well, I think we just, you know, we all are on the same page with this United People's Assembly. So I think that's a good direction to all go under. Just, you know, keeping in mind that smaller is better in the initial stages. But, and then eventually maybe I can go forward with this Canadian conference and we could get some funding to have Christy over as a guest speaker.
That'd be great.
You know, just to show Canadians that, you know, other people in the world are awake and taking steps. And you're so knowledgeable, Christy, and full of passion. You can hear that loud and clear. So we'd love to have you come over if I can get this conference underway.
I would be honored and flattered. So, yes, absolutely. And that's something else I would like to – so if you want, I can just piggyback off of that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry about that, Brenda. So, but
no,
at the end
worries.
Of the day, if we, I think it, you're absolutely right, Kevin. The power is in our numbers, but in our small and mighty numbers. And if we can be small and mighty, that's how we can be agile, yet still have the power within the people to be able to reclaim what has been wrongfully taken. That's what people need to understand. This has not been taken from you. Your rights have not been taken from you by your full knowing. If you came out of your mother's womb and said, I want to give up all my rights, would you do that? No, I guarantee you no human would. But it's been a systematically designed methodology from day one to get you to usurp those rights and give it up to, quote, government or the people in government or the crown or whomever that is in that oligarchy that we call a government nowadays and also the crown. But when we stand up now and we form our alliances and we stand behind human rights, there's nobody on the face of this planet that can argue against human rights. And it came to me in a vision or whatever we want to call it. But if you align yourself under human rights, and obviously the human rights of protecting a child fall under that, you know, protecting innocent children from vaccines, from being taken away from their families, from, you know, you pick any one of those. But if we align ourselves all under that, it will show intention so clearly and transparently, because how could anybody be against any human that is fighting and standing for human rights? And it's an easy way for us to kind of expose intentions from the top down. It's almost like, you know, when you got arrested, Kevin, I mean, how could anybody, let alone the two humans who put those statements regarding having you be arrested, there's no justification in that. So your intentions are showing right there. You know, who are you operating for? Are you operating for the people or for selfish motives?
And we have to, like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, we have to keep confronting the enemy because they expose themselves every time we do. And those guys, who not only then, but in England, the time they detained me, they're operating under a separate, they call it Track B in Canada. It's a separate administrative law with secret prisons, like the old Star Chamber courts in medieval England. No due process at all. That's what we're up against these days. So we will get into this in more detail. I thank you both, Christy and Brenda, for being on today and to carry it on. We're going to get into more detail next week. Thank you both for being with us. I want to also just make a brief announcement that if folks go to murderbydecree.com, it's very important to keep updated with the news that's going to be coming out over the next few weeks, because leading up to July 1st, if, as we know, they won't respond, but the United Nations have been given this ultimatum, and if they don't respond, there's groups all over the world beginning that will commence direct actions to disestablish the Catholic Church in their communities. And that'll be going throughout the summer and into the fall. We're going to have a lot more news about that. If you want information on how to get involved in that campaign, write to the tribunal directly at itccsoffice@gmail.com, murderbydecree.com. You can see all of our books, our work there. And one final kind of comical note, there was a news item, and we talk about this. If you go to murderbydecree.com, in the ITCCS updates, you'll see the June 1st notice about this. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation announced the results of the missing women's inquiry over 3 years, and the Canadian government actually said they dropped the adjective cultural. Now they're just using the word genocide. They said, yes, genocide has occurred in Canada. Well, under the UN Convention on Genocide, once it's established genocide occurred, every member state that's a signatory that must punish the offender, even if it's a head of state. So what Canada has stupidly done is said, well, yeah, we committed genocide, but they're pretending there's no consequence. Now there's incredible basis to say Canadians have the right to ignore their own government and not pay the taxes. They're a self-admitted genocidal body. Every government in the world that's a signatory to that UN convention has to now bring charges against Canada, sanctions, arrest Justin Trudeau as head of state, well, actually the Governor General and the Queen of England, etc. They've actually admitted it, and yet they're assuming people are so stupid they don't see the repercussions of that admission. So it's incredible.
Now is the time, people.
Yes, now is the time. It's incredible, the times we're in. And so we are going to arm you on the show of what to do in your community. The important thing, if you're listening today, is to take this information into community and act on it. This show is going to be posted at bbsradio.com/whowestand by tonight. Listen to the program, circulate it, and write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, to establish such a local assembly and direct action groups in your community, because by doing that, as we all know, you're going to save the life of children and you're going to plant seeds of our common future. So I want to thank you both, sisters, for being with us today, and we'll talk to you again next week. We'll carry it on. And everyone listening, stay strong and stay clear. I thank you.